Kipps by H.G. Wells, dramatised by Micheline Wanda, music by Ilona Sekash, with Mark Straker as Kipps, Moya Leslie as Anne, Nicholas Grace as Chitterlow, and Paul Daneman as H.G. Wells, the storyteller. Episode 5, The Kippses.
We are now very nearly at the end of the story of Arthur Kipps, draper-turned-gentleman. Since he became a rich man, Kipps has stayed in a smart hotel in London, become engaged to the genteel Miss Helen Walsingham, bought a share in a stage play by a theatrical type, name of Chitterlow, and vastly improved his sartorial elegance. But within the soul of Kipps, nay, in his very heart, one might say, all is not yet at peace. There is the small matter of the girl next door, Anne Pornick, whose fortunes have progressed no further than that of housemaid. Housemaid in the very house in which Kipps has been invited to a dinner party. Kipps, and it really gives me no pleasure at all to admit it, Kipps has behaved rather badly and rushed out of the dinner party before the dessert. Clearly he has something on his mind, something very important. I, by the way, am an extremely concerned H.G. Wells, as Kipps is something of a protege of mine.
What do you want?
Anne, I want to speak to you. I've got something to say to you.
What, down here? At the servants' door? What would them upstairs say?
Look, let me come in and talk to you.
Basement after 9, them's me hours. It ain't 9, so you can't talk to me. Why don't you go back upstairs where you belong?
Anne, just let me in for 1 minute. No more, honest. Then I'll go if you want me to.
All right. But you'll have to be quick. I'm very busy.
Right. Now then, look at this. What is it?
It's an old sixpence what's been broken off, that's all. Ain't look good to anyone like that.
Don't you see?
Hurry up, Art Kipps, I've got work to do.
I kept mine all these years.
You kept it too long.
Look, you and me was young. We broke a sixpence in half.
Broke that sixpence in half. I used me dad's file.
All right, you fold it in half, and then we took half each. Sort of a lover's token. I know he was young, but Anne?
No.
Look here, Anne. I've been a fool.
Yes.
Anne, I want to marry you.
You can't.
I must.
Well, you can't. You can't go marrying everyone. You've got to marry her upstairs, what you're engaged to.
I shan't marry her.
Look, you're engaged to her. You can't be engaged to me as well.
Anne, I don't want to be engaged to you.
Oh.
I've been engaged already. I want to be married to you. See? Right away.
What?
I mean, come right off to London now and marry me. Right now.
What? This minute?
Come and marry me right now before someone else does. See?
Well, I couldn't.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, me mum's notice isn't up.
Well, then ask to go.
She wouldn't let me, not Mrs. Bindon-Botting.
Then come without asking.
She'd keep my box.
Well, let her. Who cares? I'll buy you 100 boxes if you'll come.
And you haven't treated me properly, Artie. You kissed me when you was already engaged to her.
Look, I didn't come to argue. I was all wrong. I admit it. I've been a fool. See? There. I got myself all tied up with everyone. It isn't as if we didn't care for one another, you and me, Anne. Well, what is it? Yes or no?
I don't know.
I thought I'd never see you again. I didn't know what I wanted. But now I know what I don't want and what I do want. If you don't say you'll come, I'll go anyway. I haven't a friend in the world no more. I've been and throwed everything away. I don't know why I've done things and why I haven't done other things. All I know is I can't stand nothing in the world no more.
Artie?
Yes?
I'll do it.
You will?
Of course I will.
miserable.
Oh, so have I, Archie.
Wasn't it silly?
Oh, really stupid. Here. Oh, I better go. She's calling me.
You don't have to answer that no more.
No. I don't, do I? Oh, Archie.
I'm so happy.
Oh, we've got plans to make. I wouldn't do this for everyone, mind.
Well, I should hope not.
Give us a kiss, Artie.
Oh. And there they were. Kipps's fashionable and expensive hat lying neglected on the floor. What's the world coming to? Oh, dear. Now, where did I put my handkerchief? I'm sure it was in my breast pocket. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Kind of thing makes a fella come over all sentimental. I remember when all this started. This silly business with a sixpence. Pointless, however, to dwell on matters of the past, when the demands of the present are so pressing. Within the briefest imaginable time, the couple fled, first on foot and severally to the Folkestone Central Station, then in a first-class carriage to Charing Cross, and then in a four-wheeler, a long, rumbling, palpitating, slow flight through the multitudinous, swarming London streets to the home of Sid Pornick, Anne's brother, where, within seconds of their arrival, Kipps and Anne simultaneously announced that they were to be married as soon as possible. Sid lost no time in bringing out a bottle kept for just such occasions.
Well, congratulations to you both.
He's to you a long life together. Oh,
thank you.
He was all a bit quick. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
That's what we did, eh?
That's Artie Kipps for you. Impulsive.
Decided and done it. Yeah.
Come in.
Excuse me.
Oh. Oh, hello, Masterman.
Oh, I hope I'm not intruding.
No, not at all. Artie is going to marry my sister Anne, Masterman.
What do you think of that, Mr. Masterman?
I thought you'd find the higher life a bit difficult, but I never thought you'd have the originality to clear out.
Oh. No notice of him's going to make one of his melancholy speeches.
Mr. Masterman, you recall, is the Pornick's first-floor front lodger, a flushed and emaciated gentleman in whom the combination of a hard working life, creeping illness, and perhaps a little endemic pessimism had produced some of the most riveting and confusing observations on contemporary life which it was Kipps' fortune to hear.
You would have climbed from one refinement of vulgarity to another and never got to any satisfactory top. There's no top!
Oh.
You're doing the right insane thing, and that's a rare spectacle.
Eerie.
You're going to marry your equal. Make your own little world and your own house, first of all.
Oh, we haven't started to talk about the house yet.
Better get all that sorted out, Anne.
Mm. Here, I've made some muffins. Help yourself.
Oh, muffins and whiskey?
Where there's life, there's hope. And without eating, there's no life. So never mind about what you mix with what. Have a muffin. Funny, they're lovely.
Thanks very much.
Well, here's to hope, then. The light of the world.
Oh, no.
The light of the world.
Anne and Kipps spent the days before their marriage in a number of agreeable excursions. They went to Kew by steamboat and admired the house full of paintings of flowers. And one day they went early to have a good long day at Crystal Palace. They walked in the October sunshine, and presently they came to a region of caves and waterways and discovered huge effigies of iguanodons and mastodons, gloriously done in green and gold.
They're very big, these monsters. You wonder how they ever got enough to eat.
Auntie, what are you going to do about Ellen? I mean, you're still engaged to her.
Oh, I shall write her a letter and apologise. I'd better offer her brother damages.
Oh.
He's a solicitor and maybe he'll advise her to bring an action for breach of promise. I hope not. Anyway, I can't get a match out of reading me letters in court because I didn't write none. I don't suppose they'll sue. Her brother's me solicitor, you see. His firm handles all me money. Oh, you are pretty, Anne.
Well, you ain't so bad yourself.
It's curious how I've come to be engaged to her.
Well, she wasn't suited to you. Anyone could see that.
Oh, that's just it. But how did it come about?
I expect she led you on.
No, it wasn't that. I don't know what it was. Nice jolly bum. I suppose I'm a rum sort of fella. I get excited sometimes and don't seem to care what I do. That's what it was about, really.
It was a green and golden day. And after wandering through the grounds, they settled by the side of the lake, where they ate the sandwiches so lovingly prepared by Anne, contemplated the ducks, who were also having their lunch, and turned their thoughts once more to the future.
Let's talk about our house. Where are we going to live?
Oh, somewhere homely. Not a big house. Another sandwich?
Here, top. Well, We'll look for the sort of house we want. Not too big and not too small. We'll have a kitchen and a dining room and a parlour.
No basement.
Why not?
Because there isn't enough light in a basement. And everything's got to be carried up and down all day. Coals and everything. Oh, you'd hardly believe, Artie, if you hadn't been in service, how cruel and silly some houses are built. You'd think they'd had a spite against servants the way the stairs are made.
Well, we'll have a sensible house and sensible things. Nothing stuck up. Just sensible. Mm. I can just see our little house. It's tea time. Muffins. Kettle on the hob. Mm. Cat on the hearth rug. We must get a cat, Anne. Mm.
And you and me.
Here, Anne. I don't believe I've kissed you for... Oh, getting on for half an hour.
Oh, Artie. You're getting tired of me already.
I like the way your hair turns back, just there, above your eye. We started it when you were a girl. Here, look at that monster. Don't you think it looks like that Chet Masterman?
I don't know. That sort of animal's extinct anyway.
I wonder how they all got extinct. No one could possibly have killed them.
I read about it. All the animals was overtook by the flood.
But I thought they had to take two of everything there was in the ark.
Well, within reason they did. But this lot are very big beasts. They'd have put their feet right through the bottom of Noah's boat.
And the Kipps continued to speculate on the relative possibilities of the survival of the dinosaur dynasty, while Kipps began to think about what he might say in the letter to Helen.
Dear Miss Walsingham. No, I can't call her Miss. Dear fiancée. How do you spell that? No, that won't do. Helen. Yes, that's direct. Helen, I can't marry you. I can't explain exactly why, but there's someone else I just got to marry, and I hope you'll find someone you just got to marry as well. And I hope your mother, Mrs. Walsingham, is well, and good luck with everything. Your friend, Arthur Kipps. Yeah, that'll do. Your friend. Oh, quite like that. P.S. The wedding will be quite soon.
Thank you. Moving a little, would you? Thank you. Now hold it. That's just right. Thank you.
Now, watch the birdie. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Come on then, Artie. Kiss the bride.
What? You invite me not?
Come on, Artie. You got to.
Yeah. Is it a damn thing?
Of course it is.
Right then.
Oh. Right then, champagne all round. And wish young Anne and Artie here their health.
Oh.
Anne and Artie.
Honeymoons and all things come to an end. And at last Mr. and Mrs. Kipps descended upon the railway platform of Hythe Station to find their bright dream of a house. They began the wearying business of looking at empty properties.
Just look at these windows. There's only yards of curtains. Ah! Oh, what's that?
It's only a dead beetle.
Oh, this place is filthy. Look here. There was no water in them upstairs rooms. Some poor girl has got to go up and down, carrying every drop of water. It's having houses built by men, I believe, that makes all the work and trouble.
I think some of your brother Sid's socialism has got into your blood.
Well, it's criminal and stupid. This is a dreadful place. Now, let me tell you, Artie. We don't want a basement, and we want hot and cold water upstairs. And we want coal cellar in the house, so someone doesn't have to get soaked and frozen getting coal in from the outside.
But, Ian, we looked at dozens of houses, and none of them have got all those things.
Well, then... there's only one thing to do.
What's that?
We'll build it.
Hey?
But if we can't find what we want, why can't we build it? Well, you build it, I mean. It's your money.
Well, it's yours as well now. Well, I can be as socialistic as the next chap. But it's a good idea. After all, lots of people have built houses. Yeah. I mean, how could there be so many houses everywhere if people haven't built them?
And having decided to build a house, Kipps had to find out how to go about it. He consulted his old friends Carshot and Buggins, with whom he had worked as a draper. At first, they were as nonplussed as Kipps himself, and then Buggins remembered that you had to get an architect to do you a drawing of a house, and then Carshot remembered that he knew a man whose brother was an architect, and the architect turned out to be a small, alert individual with a black bag and a cylindrical silk hat and a demeanour of impressive woodenness. When Kipps and Anne sat down in his office, he opened his bag, took out some biscuits, a metal flask, a new pair of leather gloves, a clockwork motor car, a bunch of violets, and finally a large, distended notebook.
Right, here we are. Now, Mr. and Mrs. Kipps, tell me exactly what sort of accommodation you require.
Well, we want cupboards.
Very well. Cupboards. But how many rooms?
Well, not too many.
Bedrooms, for example. How many?
Oh, we want one of them.
You might want another, Artie. You know.
Two, then? Two bedrooms?
My dear chap, the merest shooting box... Well, you would want a bedroom which could serve for the nanny, if I may be so bold.
Three, then?
And you're bound to have the occasional guest.
Four, I suppose.
And if there were the patter of any more tiny feet, I really think it would be hard to manage with fewer than six.
Hot and cold water laid on to each bedroom. We settled on that, at any rate.
Plumbing is very expensive, Mrs. Kipps. Indeed, it is not something I would normally suggest to my clients. Not that sort of plumbing.
Well, I don't care what the thing costs, as long as it's what we want.
Ah. I see. Well, let's chat a little about the exterior. How about a Queen Anne style?
What's that when it's at home?
The great advantage of the Queen Anne style is that it allows for such variety. For example, you could have internal features such as an old English oak staircase and a gallery.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Right, I'll put down six bedrooms, one with barred windows suitable for nursery.
The ceiling of the coal cellar has to be at the right height.
Mrs. Kipps, are you suggesting that we put the coal cellar at the top of the house?
No, but we could have it on the ground floor, with the staircase outside.
It might be made a feature, I suppose. Now, how about gas heating?
Oh, yes, we must have heating. In every room.
In every room. I presume there will also be a breakfast room, a dining room and a study for Mr. Kipps.
I don't know.
Oh, well, I'd like a little bit of a study. Not a big one, of course, then, but one with a desk and bookshelves where I could have a book or two. Yeah, I'd like that.
Then we'll have a little study.
Little study.
But I don't see what we want a drawing room and a dining room and a kitchen for. If we was going to let in the summer, then well and good. But we're not going to let.
You couldn't possibly have a house without a drawing room. I could not design a house without a drawing room. And there is room for it.
Well, you can put in a drawing room. But we shan't use it.
The discussion continued when they had left the architect's office.
Fancy, Anne. A little house, all of our own.
I don't know what we want all them rooms for, Artie.
Well, they're necessary. You heard the architect say so.
But a study? We don't study, do we, Artie? We get on and do things.
When I get that study in, I shall do a bit of reading. I've often wanted to do. I shall make a habit of going in there and reading something an hour every day. Well, there's Shakespeare and Ibsen and Wild Duck and a lot of things a man like me ought to read. Self-help, that's what it is. It's a distinctive English characteristic. Someone told me that once. Besides, Anne, we've got to have somewhere to put the encyclopaedia.
The what?
The encyclopaedia. It's a book. Well, one big book split up into lots of little books. We've got to have an encyclopaedia. And if we have an encyclopaedia, we've got to have a study. It stands to reason.
I suppose so, Artie.
Well, come on. Oh, we'll get a cup of tea and a bun and talk about the furniture and the curtains.
When the architect had drawn up the plan, they went to visit him again.
Now, Miss Kipps.
Yes. Okay, yes.
Now, here we are. A plain style with practically no external features, in the best Folkestone style. If I do say it myself, it is perhaps a little too good for Hythe. Oh. Now, A central hall with a staircase, Moorish gallery, Tudor stained glass window, crenellated battlements, octagonal bay windows, surmounted by an oriental dome of metal.
It looks very big.
11 bedrooms, worked in easy as easy.
We won't want all them bedrooms.
Make this one box room, then.
Four servants would hardly be enough.
Oh, I think you could manage with four.
I don't know.
We'll have to think it over a bit.
The architect had drawn the plans on a transparent bluish paper that smelt abominably. He painted the house very nicely, in brick red and ginger, arsenic green and a leaden sort of blue. The Kippses pored over the plans together, and with Artie's uncle, who came over from New Romney to visit them.
What do you reckon, then, Uncle?
Oh, not at all bad. You got any more of this here whiskey?
Of course, Uncle.
Don't talk. I say, I saw a lot of young officer fellas when I was coming along on the bus. You ought to join the volunteers, my boy, and get to know a few.
What? They say I might. Later?
They'd make you an officer in no time. They want officers. And it isn't everyone who can afford it. You bought a dog yet?
Not yet, Uncle.
Nor a motor car?
Not yet, Uncle.
Quite right. Now, don't get one of these trashy cheap ones when you do. You get one that'll last a lifetime.
I don't really think I fancy a motor car.
Quite right. I expect you'll be happier sitting at home.
Well, we're both pretty busy, what we're thinking about the house. Look at what it says. Plan of a house for Arthur Kipps, Esquire.
Oh, very smart.
We couldn't find what we wanted, so we thought, why shouldn't we run up one for ourselves?
Yeah, it's a speculation, of course. I must say, this isn't exactly the sort of house I should expect you to have. Practically, it's a villa. It's the sort of house a bank clerk might have. It isn't what I should call a gentleman's house, Artie.
Well, it's plain, of course.
So long as it's comfortable.
You ain't comfortable, my girl, in this world, not if you don't live up to your position. A house of this sort is what a retired tradesman might have. Or a solicitor.
It's got 11 bedrooms. Is that more what a gentleman would have?
11 bedrooms? Well, let's have another look. Oh, now you could have a billiard room there. A lot of these officers would be glad of a game of billiards. What's all these dots?
Shrubbery. Flowering shrubbery.
Don't you think 11 bedrooms is a bit of a lot?
You'll want them, my girl. As you get on, you'll be having visitors. Friends of your husband's from the School of Musketry. You can't never tell.
If we have a shrubbery, we shall have to have a gardener.
If you don't have a shrubbery, how are you going to prevent every jackanapes that goes by staring into your drawing room window?
We ain't used to a shrubbery. We can get on very well without one.
It isn't what you're used to. It's what you ought to have now. Study and library. Oh, that's good. That's very good.
The discussion continued even after old Kipps had taken himself home.
Well, Uncle liked it.
I don't know, Artie. 11 bedrooms. Just think of all that cleaning.
Uncle's right. We must have servants. We've got to keep up our position. I can't have you scrubbing floors. You've got to have a servant or two, and you've got to manage a house. You wouldn't want me ashamed, would you?
No, Artie. I did want it to be a little house, a handy little house, just for us.
I'm not only thinking of myself, I'm thinking of you too, and other people. I don't want us to be looked down upon.
But who would look down on us?
Well, there's young Walsingham, my solicitor, what handles all me money. I don't want him sneering and sniffing at me. I'm as good as him now, even if I didn't marry your sister.
I'm sorry, Artie, I wasn't thinking. We'll have the big house. I don't want anyone saying I've dragged you down.
Well, except... Well, maybe you are right, Anne. I mean...
No, Artie. It means a lot to you. And we'll have it.
And so Kipps was committed to £2,500 worth of building work. Soon he became the owner of a freehold plot of 3/8 of an acre and saw the turf being wheeled away from the site that should one day be his home.
Here we are, then. This is where my study's going to be.
It's just a pile of stones, Artie.
Well, that's what's exciting about building an house. It's the imagining. Here, we'll have to think of a name for it. Home Cottage, how about that?
Oh, I like cottage for an house.
But then with 11 bedrooms, it isn't exactly a cottage. Properly speaking, it's more like a villa.
Well, how about Home Villa, then?
How about Eureka Villa?
What's Eureka?
It's your name. There used to be Eureka Dress Fasteners when I was a prince draper. Oh, come to think of it, there's lots of names we've got out of a shop. We could have Pajama Villa. Then there was Mariposa. It's a sort of oatmeal quilt.
We can't call an house Pajama Villa, Artie.
Why not? We can call it anything we like. Well, so long as it fits, eh? I could call it Waddycombe, after my grandfather Waddy, who left me all my money. Or something simple like Number One. Or patriotic like Empire Villa. Or elegant like
Same dream.
Or appetizing, like steak and kidney villa.
As Anne and Kipps walked home, their spirits lightened by the prospect of choosing a name for the house. Kipps was reminded of the momentous surprise when he first learned that he was to be elevated from the position of humble draper in a Folkestone emporium to that of young gentleman with a private income to dispose of. The announcement had been made, he remembered, by a solicitor called...
Bean. Old Bean. Of Watson and Bean.
Oh.
Kipps had come a long way since that day. Now, as he and Anne awaited progress on their new house, they stayed, temporarily, in rented accommodation, which was furnished in a style of mediocre elegance. There was a sideboard of carved oak. There were a pair of Japanese jars on the mantelshelf, several sumptuous Chinese fans, and a Turkey carpet of great richness. There were also two inactive tall clocks, whose extreme dilapidation appealed to the connoisseur, or so Kipps had been told. One day, the Kippses were sitting at their midday dinner table, amidst the vestiges of rhubarb pie, discussing the 1 o'clock post. Kipps was attired in a suit of brown with a tie of fashionable green, while Anne wore one of those picturesque loose robes that are usually associated with sandals and advanced ideas.
Oh, I got a letter from Sid. There's a couple of postcards for you. What'd they say?
Well, I never. Young Walsingham says he's unavoidably prevented from seeing me today. Well, luck is cheap. We arrange to go and start paying the builders.
I must say he's been treating you a bit off recently.
Yes. He's getting too big for his britches. Ever since I married you instead of his sister, he seems to think I've got no right to spend my own money.
What's the other postcard?
Dashed if I can read much of it. C.H. Oh, by Jove, he's from Chitlow. You know, the actor chap I met a while ago. Now, what's this say? Yes. What price are he now? Well, I expect he's either done something or not done something towards getting on that play of his.
A play he's acting in?
I'll play what he wrote. Always act to something. Ed should have invested some money in it.
Some money?
Yeah, a couple of thousand.
Couple of thousand?
Oh, it was a safe investment. He assured me. Well, actually, he sort of taught me into it somehow, without my really knowing what was going on. Very amusing chap he could be. Well, sometimes. Always act to something. Full of stories. Maybe he's had a bit of luck. Oh, I can't read the rest. His handwriting's terrible.
I'll clear the things away if you've finished. What are you going to do now, then? Go for a walk?
Well, I went for a walk yesterday. Oh, I suppose I could go for another.
A bit windy out. Take your scarf.
I wonder why young Borson won't see me. It's all lies about him being too busy. I'm sure it is.
It's raining, Artie. Put on your Macintosh.
Right-o. When I come back, let's have a bit of tea and some toasted tea cake, eh? Toast it in front of the fire.
Righto, Artie. Tea and toasted tea cake.
Things conspired to demoralise Kipps that afternoon. His Macintosh flapped round his legs, the rain stung his cheek, and then, quite abruptly, the weather changed. The sun shone, and there was Kipps in his Macintosh and squeaky leggings, looking like a fool.
Damn it, Mr. Wills, why don't I ever get anything right?
That lady over there has an umbrella.
Of course, the right thing for a day like today is a light overcoat and umbrella. Damn, I'll never get anything right.
Look how the house is getting on, Kipps.
There's no one here. It's just trenches full of wet concrete. The builders were having me. John Borsingham's having me. Don't respect me because I can't do things right. I'm an outcast. If I had a special sort of tutor to show me everything right, I'd be in a pink.
That's rubbish, Kipps.
Well, look at that. 11 bedrooms. No one ever come to stay. I haven't got a thing worth counting.
What about Buggins and Carshot?
Shop assistants.
Oh, dear. Sid and Fanny Pornick and their baby, little Walt Whitman.
Hello, socialist lot. Besides, they're relatives anyway.
Well, then, there's that chap over there.
Where?
Walking on the other side of the road. Mr. Coote.
Coote? Well, bless my soul. Hey, Coote. Chester Coote. Over here. It's me, Artie Kipps. Oh, he can't hear me. Coote!
I think he heard you.
He hasn't even looked round. He's walking on. He's hurrying. Mr. Wells. He's cut me. Chester Coote has cut me. That is the end. It really is.
Well, perhaps I was wrong. Perhaps he didn't hear you.
No. He heard me. And he cut me. Oh, Lord. is nothing left.
That's a little unfair.
Oh, well, you tell me. Who else is there left?
I'm surprised at you, Arthur Kipps. There's Anne.
Oh, her. She's just Anne.
Just Anne?
Oh, well, I suppose she's all right. But she's been all tearful and moody lately.
Has she now?
What's that supposed to mean?
It's supposed to mean, have you thought about why she's all tearful and moody?
Well, to worry about the house, I suppose.
Oh, come on. Kipps.
Well, what else? Oh. Oh. Mr. Wells, you don't mean... You can't mean...
Ask her, then. Talk to her.
I will. I will. Ta-ta. On my phone now.
Although Kipps was hurrying home with some hopeful excitement in his heart, it must be confessed that the passing encounter with Coote, or rather the lack of encounter, had gone very deep. Coote, who had spoken to him of self-help. Coote, who had lent him books on the language of flowers and manners and etiquette. Coote, whose sister had spoken to him of the world's 100 best paintings. Coote, whom he had considered his friend, cutting him because he had married beneath his station. He was in a mental turmoil and in physical discomfort as his Macintosh swished against his leggings and his leggings piped and whistled over his boot tops.
Anne? Hello, Anne? Anne, where are you?
Here, Artie, in the kitchen, washing up.
Anne, what's all these cards on the old table?
Cards? Oh, that's callers.
What, Miss G. Porritt Smith? Miss Mabel Porritt Smith? The Reverend D. Porritt Smith? Lord, clergy.
There was a lady and two grown-up girls all dressed up.
And him?
There was no him.
But his card?
He didn't call. Just a lady and two young ladies.
But why should they leave this card if he didn't come with them?
Perhaps all the cards they got. Whoever calls.
Not a little chap who's...
I told you, no gentleman.
Well, it's rum. He must have given the slip. Gone off while they're waiting for you to let him in. It's a fair call, anyhow. What do they talk about?
They didn't. I didn't let him in.
Didn't let him in?
No.
Why on earth not?
Well, when the door went, I was upstairs polishing the floor. I didn't know there was callers. We ain't never had no callers. I thought I'd polish the floor and get tea. How was I to think about callers?
So what then?
They came and knocked at the door. I thought it was a tradesman or something. I never took my apron off. I had polish all over my hands. And there they was. Is Mrs. Kipps at home? She says to me.
Yes.
And me all polishing, no cap on or nothing. Not a mistress nor servant. Well, Artie, I could have sunk through the floor with shame. I really could. I could hardly get me voice out. I just said, not at home. And out of habit, like. I held out the tray for the card. So they gave me the cards and they went.
Well, I never.
They looked me up and down and they went. And that's about it.
I wouldn't have that happen for £5. Clergyman and all.
Is that so, Art Kipps?
You did ought to know better than that, and you really did.
That's what you think, is it?
Why else can I think?
I don't see there's any use getting in a state about it.
Don't you? I do. Is these people good enough to want to associate with us? And then you go and slap them in the face.
I did not slap them in the face.
Practically. You slam the door in their faces, and that's all we'll ever see them again. I'll tell you what, Ian. You've got to return that call. That's what you've got to do.
Oh, I have I?
You'll have to look it up in that book I got, Manners and Rules of Good Society. You've got to find out just how many cars to leave, and then you've got to leave them, see?
I don't know anything about that.
I just told you. You find that out. They won't recognise you, not in that Bond Street out I bought you. And if they do, they won't say nothing.
No.
What?
I can't.
You must.
I can't and I won't. Anything in reason I'll do, but I won't face those people again after what happened.
You won't?
That's right, I won't.
I see. So there they go. And we never see them again. We don't know nobody, and we shan't know nobody. And you won't put yourself out, not one little bit, or take the trouble to find out how anything ought to be done.
I don't think I ever ought to have married you, Arthur Kipps, and that's the truth. If I'd known you had these ideas before I married you, I never would have married you.
Oh, don't go on like that.
It's true. I'm not equal to the position that you want. You should have told me what you wanted, then I'd have known what you wanted.
I don't see why you shouldn't try. I've improved no end from what I was.
I don't know about that.
What?
I don't want to improve. I'm me, and I like me like I am. So there.
Oh, Lord. Fiend.
Oh. Now all that buttered tea cake that I spent so long over tea has all gone cold. Tastes like leather now. I'll just have to throw it away.
The Kipsies spoke no more to one another that day. The sense of wrong which each one felt burned within them. Their souls were full of pain. They suffered and did not understand why. And they could not voice their pain to one another. Next morning, Kipps received a telegram from his ex-fiancée, Helen Walsingham, summoning him to Folkestone urgently.
Well, it's funny seeing you again, Helen.
Yes.
Why'd you send me that telegram? It sounded very urgent.
It is. I'm afraid I've got some rather bad news.
Not your mother?
Well, Mother is quite distraught. She's had to take to her bed. No... It's Henry.
Oh, I've been trying to get hold of him. See, he's
I'm afraid you won't be able to find him.
He's not lost, is he?
Well, not exactly. He's gone away.
Well, he'll be back, won't he?
I don't think so. I'm horribly afraid, Arthur, that Henry is not all he should be. You see, he was always rather careless with money, pocket money, when he was a child, that sort of thing. But now, well... It's other people's money he's rather careless with.
Oh, law.
Yes, oh, law. And after all that Mother and I hoped for. Well, it is not to be. We shall not be able to move to London or anything.
Well, never mind. You can stay here.
It's worse than that. You see, I'm terribly afraid that he has embezzled little... your money, among others.
Well, that sounds very important.
But it is important. It is quite shocking.
Oh, I'm sure you'll get over it.
Arthur, I don't think you quite understand. Do you know what embezzlement means?
No. But I'm sure he knows what he's doing.
Oh, I think he does. Look, perhaps we'd better go to a solicitor who can explain it to you.
But I've got a solicitor. Your brother Henry, he's my solicitor.
I think you will need another solicitor. Come, we can go now.
Ellen... Can I ask you something?
The solicitor will be able to answer all your questions, Arthur.
No, something personal. When I said I couldn't marry you, was he very angry?
Well, not really. No. I think we would not have been ideally suited.
So you're not mad at me?
Oh, no, Arthur. How could I be?
Oh...
After having the word embezzled explained to him, his face was very white when he returned home to Anne, and so urgent was his news that he broke the silence between them.
Anne, I've got something to tell you.
What, Artie?
He's gone. Young Walsingham. He's cleared off.
I don't understand.
He's gone for good. I saw Ellen, his sister. She sent me the telegram and she told me everything. He'd been speculating. He speculated our money and other people's money, and now he's slung his hook.
You mean he's lost our money?
Yes, all of it. Not a penny left. If I had him here, I'd wring his neck, I would.
What, Turner?
He bought things dear and he sold them cheap. We're ruined.
Oh, I don't know.
Ellen, I just told you. Oh, I don't mean to shout at you, but I'm so shook up.
What did Ellen say?
She told me to get another solicitor straight away and get him to help me. I think she always knew her brother wasn't reliable, but didn't like to say.
So what do you do then?
I went to old Bean, who was my solicitor, before I give all the money to young Walsingham.
What did he say?
Well, he couldn't tell me much till we got a few more facts. And there's the new house and heaven knows how many other debts.
Oh, I don't think I shall mind it all that much.
We was fools, Anne, and didn't know our benefits. And then there's Buggins. I promised I'd help him start a little outfitting shop in Rendezvous Street. It was good to me when I was first apprenticed as a draper.
I think it might not be as bad as you think.
We're bankrupt. I ought to have known. I don't mind so much for myself. But there's you, Anne.
I don't think it's a disaster.
But...
I don't mind working. I won't go back into service. That's out the question now I'm married. And, well, there's other things. But I could do other jobs, like work in a shop. It'd be more company than cleaning an house on my own all day.
Oh, I couldn't do all that again. Looking at advertisements and trying to find a good place. Fancy all that beginning again.
Look, Artie. First, you should wait till you hear from old Bean. And second, we'll manage all right, honest.
I don't know how you can think like that.
It's the way I am.
Oh, Ian. I've been so cross with you and a fool about them cards. I'm sorry.
That was just silly. I nearly forgot about that already.
I didn't really care whether or not you called on that clergyman.
Of course you didn't. Now, you were so het up yesterday that I didn't get a chance to tell you something.
And I had something to ask you and I clean forgot it.
Well?
Is it true?
If it means what I think it does, then it is. I'm going to have a baby. We're going to have a baby.
What? Really? Oh, Anne. Oh, Anne. How clever you are.
Oh, no, Mr. Kipps. How clever you are.
Well, anyway, we've got to celebrate. What should we do? Shall we go for a walk? Go out to tea? Go out to a restaurant? Oh. Oh, no. Oh, dear. How are we going to manage with a baby?
I said we'll manage. Now, we'll go for a walk and then we'll come back and we'll have hot butter toast and tea. And then we'll go to bed.
When Kipps heard from old Bean again, it was as Anne had said. Not quite as bad as it first appeared. There was well over £1,000, and there was the freehold of the land Kipps had already paid for. And there was still the house in Folkestone, Hughenden, which had belonged to his grandfather. That was let for the summer and would go on bringing in rent. With these facts before them, Anne and Kipps began to plan.
Anne, what do you say to us getting a shop?
Oh, I'd like a shop of our own. What kind of shop? You know drapery, you could teach me.
No, you want a lot of capital for a draper, over £1,000. Oh. I thought of something else. I was thinking of a little bookshop. Well, I think I'd like it. Then I could have a good going at reading as well. I've often wanted to.
Do you know much about books, Artie?
No, you don't need to. I notice that when ladies go to the library, they aren't half as fussed as when they go to the draper. If they go in a draper and you haven't got what they want, it's who knew, and out they go. But in a bookshop, it's different.
Oh.
One book's very like another after all. People will take what you're giving them books and be glad to be told what to read.
It's a wonderful idea, Artie. We weren't really suited to having lots of money.
Fish is out of water.
No one will come calling and leaving cards.
Nah.
No need for us to be stuck up.
We'll be common people with no position at all.
We'll be shopkeepers.
Shortly, Kipps noticed an advertisement for a comprehensive scheme of transatlantic origin which involved the financing of a chain of bookshops. He replied, and before long, the shop was a reality. There was a smell of paint and of the shavings of imperfectly seasoned pinewood. Already his name, Arthur Kipps, was outlined in white letters above the shop. Under the counter, to the right, paper and string lurked, ready to spring up and embrace goods sold. On the table to the left, art publications.
Thank you, madam. Do call again.
In the kitchen at the back of the shop, Anne sat in the evening knitting little garments for some unknown stranger, while Kipps worked on his accounts.
Look, Artie. What do you think of him?
He's lovely. Perfect. Look at all him fingers.
He's over £9.
Where did he get £9 from?
He weighs £9, silly. Here, hold him.
Oh, I couldn't.
Go on, he won't break.
Oh, all right. Yeah, careful. Why is he dropping his head?
You've got to support his head in your hand. Like that. There you are.
Oh, he'll fall. Anne, get hold of him. Oh. Oh. Oh, look. He's just lying all quiet here. Here. This is a bit of all right, isn't it?
He likes you.
Well, I should think so. Barmy's dead. You hear that? Here, what do I call him?
I don't know. We can call him what we like.
We could call him anything at all. Archibald.
John.
Anthony James.
Eureka.
No, can't have Eureka Kipps written up over the shop. Come to think of it, I should by rights include my father's name somewhere. Waddy. Oh, but you can't call a little scrap Waddy, can you?
How about Arthur Waddy Kipps?
That's just it. Arthur Waddy Kipps. Yeah. Good, good. And on the shop it will say, Arthur Kipps and Son. How about that then, eh?
Well, the story is practically finished. Or if not finished, has nearly reached the moment when we might properly leave the Kippses to their busy life. But there are one or two people whose stories need to be brought up to date. For example, the actor chap, Chitterlow. Chitterlow arrived in the shop one morning, in singularly crumpled evening dress, with a hat tilted remarkably forward, and one vast white glove flung out, and burst into tears.
Sit, Biff! Oh, Kipps! Kipps, my dear old matey! Kipps! Good old Kipps! Oh, Kipps, you've no idea! My play! My play, you remember?
I think so. Oh, dear Chitlow, I'm sorry if it's flopped.
Oh, it's a success. My dear chap, your trust in me has been validated, and I've come to tell you it's a... it's a big success. Oh, I'll be all right in a minute. Calm down. Calm down, Chitlow.
Why, this is marvellous. Cheer up, dear fellow.
Oh, I've been to first nights before, you know. I've been up all night talking to the boys, but nothing like this.
Tell me how it happened.
Well, they laughed a bit at the beginning, but nothing like a settled laugh until the second act. You know that bit about the chap with a live beetle down his neck? Well, then they began, laughing, laughing. We jumped them into the third act before they had time to cool. I never saw a first night go so fast. They laughed at everything. They laughed at things we didn't mean to be funny. Then Biff, Biz, Curtain. I went on, but I didn't say a word. It was like walking across Niagara. All that applause going across that stage.
Oh, I'm delighted for you.
Oh, it means wealth. Thousands of pounds. Money. Oh, I'm glad it's come to me now and not before. I've learned the value of money. There may be a country house, a flat in Westminster, but nothing more. You, Kipps, shall have your rightful share for believing in me.
Why, it's dash decent of you. Tell the truth, I forgot all about it.
It's even in the paper, a review, a whole column. And now I must leave you and take the news to my darling wife. Farewell, matey. Farewell, oh best of friends.
And with that, Chitterlow, his face lit by a vast excitement, departed into the sunlight with his buoyant walk. Buoyant, almost to the point of being tottering. He stopped at the newsboy's stand and bought a copy of every single newspaper, proceeding on his way, swinging a great budget of papers, a figure of merited success. Anne and Kipps watched the proceedings from the doorway of the shop.
I'm glad for him.
So am I. If anyone deserves success, it's Chitlow.
What about all that money coming to you?
Well, it won't make no difference. We'll keep the shop on anyhow. I haven't much trust in money after all that's happened to me.
That was 2 years ago, and as the whole world knows, Harry Chitterlow's play, The Pestered Butterfly, is still playing to packed houses in a little theatre in the Strand. Night after night, the beetle scene draws happy tears from the crowds, and every so often, Kipps receives a welcome cheque from Chitterlow. He sits in the little kitchen behind the shop while Anne baths Arthur Waddy Kipps in front of the fire.
I shall put the money in the bank against the day you have to go to school, Arthur Waddy Kipps. Till there's free education, you've got to be paid for, and you're going to grow up knowing your way about a bit. I've half a mind to bury it under the shop. I expect one would always be coming bound at nights to make sure it was still there. I don't seem to trust anyone.
I wonder who that can be.
It's a bit late for the shop. I'll just see who it is.
The bookshop which belongs to Kipps is on the left-hand side of Hythe High Street, as you come from Folkestone, between the yard of the livery station and the shop window of antiques and silver.
Good evening, sir. What may I have the pleasure?
I'm looking for a book.
Well, you come to the right place. What sort of book is it?
Well, I like fantasy, scientific romances, that sort of thing. I'm looking for a book called The First Men in the Moon.
Oh, that's rather a good title. Who wrote it?
A fellow called Wells. H.G. Wells.
Wells. Now, that name rings a bell. But I don't recall the book. What's it about?
Well, it's about the first men on the moon.
Well, there's a rum one. Mind you, it's not as daft as it sounds.
It isn't?
No. I was on the moon once.
Really?
Well, I come into me fortune. You may not believe it to look at me, but I inherited a fortune once.
Did you?
Oh, yes. Run for it. Then I got another, speculating in plays. I'd even keep this shop on if I didn't want to, you know. But it's something to do. And I'll get to meet gentlemen like yourself, what read books I never dream about.
And write them, too.
Pardon?
Nothing.
Of course, I've seen some things. In my youth, of course. I could tell you a story or two.
Well, everyone has a story to tell.
That's just it. Now, I've wrote down the title of that book you wanted.
Are you sure it's no trouble for you?
No trouble, I assure you. I'll order it for you. Should be here in a couple of weeks.
I'll call again.
Please do. I'm always pleased to have a chat. You stopping here for your holidays?
Yes, after a fashion. By the way, could you recommend a reliable gents' outfitter?
Oh, you want Buggins. It's just a job. Little shop in Rendezvous Street. He'll have everything for a gents' wardrobe. Tell him I sent you. Here's his card.
I shall be sure to do so. Buggins. Yeah. Good day, then.
Good day, sir. Call in any time. I'm always here.
The marvellous thing about going into Kipps's shop is that you can talk to him about absolutely anything. He can talk about books, politics, about going to Boulogne, about life and its ups and downs. He will quote to you the sayings of a chap called Masterman. He can discourse on the finer points of running a drapery emporium. And he can share your delight in Beethoven, should you be the sort of refined person who delights in Beethoven. I myself am now an old and trusted customer of his. And for many amiable reasons, I intend to keep things on that very pleasant footing. One day, during that very beautiful summer, Kipps and Anne went for a row on the Hythe Canal. There was the water, shining bright, and the sky a deepening blue, and the great trees that dipped their boughs in the water. And out of the darkness of the water rose a question. The question of the wonder of the beauty, the purposeless, inconsecutive beauty, that falls so strangely among the happenings and memories of life. The question, however, never quite reached the surface of Kipps' mind. It never took to itself substance or form.
Artie?
Hmm? What, Anne?
Penny for your thoughts, Artie.
Oh, I don't think they're worth as much as that. I wasn't really thinking of anything at all. No.
Not anything at all?
Well, I suppose I was just thinking what a rum go everything is. I expect it was just something a bit like that.
Funny old Artie.
Ain't I, though? I don't suppose there was ever a chap quite like me before.
No, I don't expect there was, Artie.
And then again, I don't know. I just don't know.
And if Kipps doesn't know, who am I to say whether there has ever been anyone quite like him?
Dainman played H.G. Wells, Mark Straker, Kipps, and Moya Leslie, Anne, in the fifth and final episode of Kipps by H.G. Wells, which has been dramatised in five episodes by Micheline Wonder. Sid, Michael Jenner, Fanny, Teresa Stratfield, Masterman, Nigel Anthony, Kipps' uncle, John Hollis, Architect, Brett Usher, Helen, Catherine Hurlbut, and Chitterlow, Nicholas Grace. The music was composed by Ilona Sekach and played by Bill Ezard, Harold Lester, and Christopher Smith. Kipps was directed by Martin Jenkins.